And Camden, we've got a long history with Camden, an interesting area, certainly an underserved area, and a lot of environmental degradation in Camden.
Yes, for sure.
Lo, do you want to give us a rundown of what you see the status is and where we're at in terms of EPA and what we're planning in terms of HMTRI and our annual meeting?
Sure. We are, one of the things that HMT provides under our cooperative agreement, our main deliverable for EPA is an annual meeting for all funded EPA grantees, and that doesn't mean that they need to have money that they're working with right now. It could be one of the very first grantees that were funded. It's anyone who has ever been funded on a job training grant. We bring all of those people together at one annual meeting where they can network and learn from each other. That meeting is always held in the fall. This year, we just are in the process of signing a contract with a hotel. The meeting will be held October 1st and 2nd in Alexandria, Virginia. The reason for that location is it's easy access for EPA headquarters, and typically we have a lot of people from EPA headquarters that attend the meeting, along with a representative from all 10 EPA regions. So not only are you able to network with the other grantees, but also with the project officers and EPA headquarters.
And of course, we're all aware that the RFP is out and due April 12th, and we've been getting quite a few calls about questions and some particulars and clarifications of that. Were you both able to be on the webinars that EPA had last week? We've had about three different webinars. We had one, and then EPA has had two. Has anyone missed that? Any of you missed that webinar at all? Both be able to participate in it? Okay. There were a few things that are probably going to be good to clarify and some things that we wanted to go over today in terms of how to score points and how you might be able to improve your grant. And the way these grants work, of course, is once they go through your threshold criteria and they determine that you do qualify, that you're a nonprofit, that you basically, your budget's under $200,000, and the basic criteria that they talk about, which is fairly straightforward, then they go into the grading portion. And you're probably both familiar with that, the ranking criteria. And the ranking criteria is an attempt to make something that could be subjective into something that's very objective so that they can somehow rank everyone. And then in the end, they do make a subjective decision. They're going to take all of the grant proposals that are left. This year, I think there'll be slightly less than there usually are, but they'll probably come down to about 50 of them that will go into the ranking criteria. And they have to somehow rank order these 50 proposals. And the best way they've found to do this is to ask a whole lot of questions. And then they break these grant proposals up, and they go through each ranking criteria, and they actually give you a score based on every question that they asked in the ranking criteria. So they're going to actually go question by question, and they'll break into their groups, and they're going to have to evaluate. If they ask a question, they're going to look in your grant proposal and how did you answer that question. And if you skipped over the question, it's going to take off points. And, of course, if you answered it, it'll give you points. And then they're going to come up with their ranking for that question, for that criteria. And then there'll be different groups working on different criteria, and then they'll put these all back together again, and they'll be able to assign scores to every proposal. And what the implication of this is that you really need to answer every question as specifically as you can, not assuming that it's answered somewhere else in the grant. That question is going to have to stand alone, and almost to the point of being very straight in the face and repetitive, where even though you said it before, you say it again, answering that specific question. And where some of the grants have not, we've had many very good programs that it's amazed us that they hadn't been funded, and it was basically in the grant writing process. And they've either, what I call, stepped on a landmine and said something that they're not looking for or not accepting, which is one problem that'll knock you out or knock you down, or not answering a question. And maybe you've actually even answered that question, but it was somewhere else in the proposal. So you really have to answer every question in every part of the proposal that they ask. That's going to be critically important. And then, of course, keeping your page count down. So that's the way to do it. And the way, it's almost like making an assembly line of dissecting the RFQ, the request for proposals, and just going line by line and answering that question. And one of the things, and let's take Alaska, and that's a good point we were talking about earlier. One of the threshold criteria, of course, is you can't have the same grant, and they don't want to have duplication. So they don't want to duplicate an NIHS grant, or they don't want to be doing the same thing as a energy grant or a Department of Labor grant. That doesn't mean that you can't have one. You just have to differentiate yourself. So what you need to do is very specifically say why, if there is another grant in the area, which you would want to acknowledge that there is a grant in such and such covering this area, what we're going to do is focus on this other area that really needs to be focused on, and it's a population that occurs in this highly degraded area, that there is a lot of environmental degradation here, and in addition to environmental degradation, we have the people who live here, the indigenous population, is underserved. So we're going to not only target the underserved population, but the underserved population in this degraded area. One of the things that some of the grantees might do is they would say, well, we're going to work with ex-offenders, or we're going to work with veterans. But now if someone else comes along and says, we're going to work with veterans or disabled veterans, but these veterans live in this Brooklyn community, in this quadrant of the city that is predominantly focused with has scrap yards and has incredible amounts of environmental degradation and low property values, that is a winner versus the other. And if you're talking about a statewide program, there's a pluses and minuses associated with that. In a plus way, it can give you a broad area that you can select your locations from, but in a negative sense, you will probably have to demonstrate in that proposal some highly degraded areas that are a result of environmental degradation, and also further try to identify populations in that area that you're going to target. And that will zero you in on what they're looking for, and also give you the points up over someone else who might not be doing that. When you look at these grant proposals, between the community engagement and the employer engagement, and you're talking, and the needs assessment, you're talking about half of the points that they're going to be awarding in one way or another. And so what we want to do is we would like to focus on those areas that have the most points. And of course, this is going to be working with the community, which is working with the employers, which also ties into your needs assessment. And they all kind of link together. And when you're writing your proposal, your ground research that you're going to be doing in writing this proposal will get you information on all of these. If to get your needs assessment, you're going to have to work with employers and you're going to have to work with the community to target your audience that you're going to be training. But at the same time, these also fit into those slots. So I would say at this point in the grant, what you're going to have to do is really zero in and zoom into these communities and find out the communities you want to address. And as part of that needs assessment, which is a very important part of this, on both those calls, they have emphasized, which they hadn't in previous years, the importance of the employment side of this. They're mostly interested in placing people, and the grants that demonstrate how you're going to be placing people are going to be extremely important in high level of detail. And the things that will differentiate a winning grant from one that might be not as not stand out as much will be your strategy for placing people. And ideally, if you have your employers already lined up, who may be on your advisory committee, or you may have some letters of support or recommendations from them, not necessarily commitments to hire, but commitments to look at your candidates is what you're looking for. It's very hard to pin someone down to say they will hire people, but it's not difficult to get them to commit to attending some of your classes, hospitality nights, to give like guest lectures. In fact, a good way to work with employers is to suggest that you're applying for a grant to do job training, and would you or someone in your organization, could you participate in providing some guest lectures, for example? And that kind of breaks the ice with your employers, and they feel, oh yeah, we'd be happy to send people over to talk about it. And then you lead from there into, would you consider, if you find our program is appropriate, would you consider interviewing or looking at some of our people for possible hires? And then, of course, hopefully they'll say, okay, that sounds good too. We'd be happy to do that. Then your next question in this, in contacting your employers is, and this may be over a couple of meetings, could you give us a little letter or some sort of an email that you support our program and that you would like to look at our graduates to see if they would be appropriate for your program? Now you've got some really substantial hard evidence that you could put in your proposal that you have a commitment from an employer, potential employer, to look at your graduates. And this is really what really they're looking for. They want a commitment to look at your graduates. And those grantees who have commitments, and I think this is something that does favor people who have done this in the past versus people who have never done it before, people who have got ongoing programs already have these relations set up with their employers. And they know them well enough, and in fact, they've probably hired some people. And for them to go to them and say, could you write me a letter or an email that you'd look at our, that you've looked at in the past or you will look at in the future, our graduates, it's much easier for them to get that type of letter that they could include in their grant that makes them look very strong in terms of their employment. And of course, this year, I think more than even other years, that commitment by employers to hire is key, because they want the 70% placement, but they also are looking for some sort of commitment by employers. So what I would do on any of your programs, whether it's statewide or local, I would try to find some employers, and this is not only in the categories under working with employers, but also in the needs assessment, working with those employers to try to get an idea of the types of people they're looking for and the needs. And you're going to also want to document this. Needs assessment is fine, and they talk about in the RFP, they talk about all the demographics, and they want you to put the demographics of the community that you're talking about. But they very subtly slip in, we also would want some specifics in terms of your target group. And so what they're really saying there is we want some hands-on, face-to-face needs assessment documented in there. Who have you talked to that have demonstrated to you that they will be interested in positions that you may train in certain topic areas? So this is how these two kind of intermingle, working with employers and your needs assessment. If you could, again, get to those employers, not only trying to get them to get you some sort of documentation that they would look at your employees, but also some kind of documentation on their need for employees with certain certifications. That, you know, ideally, if you could get three or four waste recyclers or waste remediators in your community or statewide, and get into those organizations and ask them questions. And the best way to do this is to have a personal interview, visit them or phone visit them, and have a conversation with them on what they're looking for. And to the degree they may be hiring next year, your first graduation class in Alaska may be about, you know, this time next year. When we look at these schedules, you're talking about an award date this summer, late summer, and then getting your program going in the fall and winter with graduation perhaps about now for peak construction season, you know, going from now till end of summer. So with that in mind, you're looking at potential needs for people a year from now. But again, to the extent that you could get some sort of feeling for that and commitment on a face-to-face conversation that you could document in your grant proposal, it's going to boost your score tremendously. The more of these people you can talk to, the better. And the question is, well, how do I find these people? And the obvious people to talk to in the areas we're working with are your remediators, anyone working with hazardous materials. Underground storage tanks are now a legitimate area. Wastewater treatment is a brand new. We're expecting people will start writing wastewater treatment. Both in Alaska would be a big demand area. Almost every urban area, the situation in wastewater treatment is that there were many people that went into this field in the early 70s, and they're all retiring now. And we're finding that there's a big demand for wastewater treatment plant operators across the country. Back in the 70s, there was a huge training program implemented by EPA, funded by EPA, and no such program exists today. What we found when we talked to people in wastewater and municipalities are they're basically training people themselves on the job, and that's where they're getting their trained operators. You may want to contact some of the wastewater treatment plants, municipal plants, and see where they're getting their people. The numbers are staggering across the country and across the state. It would be a very large number of people they're going to have to replace. What you would have to find out is how they're replacing their people and how they're going to train them and what they're expecting in terms of training needs. You may find that there's a huge demand even outside of this grant that you may get funding to train wastewater treatment plants in your community, you may find, for example, that there's a bigger need and there might be people within the state that are willing to fund you just to train wastewater treatment plant operators to fill the demand. And it's just something to think about. But that's a side conversation from the fact is what we want to do is work extremely close to employers as we can. While you have that employer on the line and you're talking to him, and you can see how this conversation is going to evolve into first a very friendly discussion about what you're planning on doing and then moving into their needs and what they would like to see in a program like this and can they participate in your program and what are their needs and perhaps they could send you some documentation on that they would like to look at your people. But then as you talk to these individuals, you may decide you're going to actually want to have them on your advisory boards. And again, in terms of scoring points, those programs who are established that have an edge over newly established programs is they've got their advisory boards already set up. And they may say, you know, in an excellent grant proposal, we have our advisory board, and these are our advisory boards. They include people from that will be hiring our people. We've got people that are from the field. They're going to be providing guest lectures. They're going to be looking at our people. They're going to be guiding us on our curriculum, giving us assessments of how we're doing. And they've actually listed them with their phone numbers, and they can also use them as references. So you see how these all tie together. They ask for references and phone numbers that they can call. To the extent that you get to know these employers, you can use them as references. You can tie them into your program, get them bonded with your program, and have their phone numbers and keep them up abreast. Now, one might say, this is an awful lot of work because I haven't gotten the grant yet, but you really need to start this early. And with the premise that you're going after this money, if for whatever reason you don't get this money, there are other funds that may also start this program or get you started. For example, if you didn't get accepted this year, you might go after it next year. If you wrote an unsuccessful grant last year, the wise thing to do is sit down with and I think it's too late now. When the RFP comes out, the grant representatives from EPA are not allowed to talk to you specifically about your grant. But to the extent that you were able to talk to them at an earlier point in time over some of the things you didn't include in that grant or where your weak spots were, it would help and in writing. And for next year, to the extent that you submit a grant and if it's not successful, I would pursue other monies to get you started and get your planning process and assume that you would get one and then keep rolling because you've got to – the way you want to phrase it with the employers, if we get this grant and we get this started, we'd like you to serve. Would you be willing to serve on our advisory board? And they usually will say yes, would be happy to. And the reason they're going to be so cooperative is all of this costs them nothing, and they have the potential of getting employees with tens of certifications worth thousands of dollars for nothing. And they can get, you know, if they're part of your program, they get the cream of the crop. The more an employer is involved with your program, the more likely he's going to get your best students. And so there's a lot of reasons for hazardous waste firms, perhaps even an organization like UPS or FedEx or any type of remediator or large industry to work with your program because there is no commitment on their part in terms of hiring someone. And they also have a chance to look at your students, and it's a great opportunity for them. The other thing about scoring points, I put a lot of emphasis on employers and how that ties into the needs assessment, but it also ties into the community. And the community is going to have to overlay on top of the employers. Your community, now, your employers don't necessarily have to be located in the community that your participants are coming from, but your community that you're going to focus on will be a community near, perhaps the employers are nearby, and they may be ideally working in that community, but we're talking about an area that has been polluted for whatever reason, has been underserved, has from health issues, whatever those issues are, you want to be able to identify in your grant. A lot of points are going to be given to the community that you're going to be recruiting from and serve. And that's a little different than your employer community and your assessment community, but it's going to be the community that's going to be most impacted by this grant in terms of getting people to go into your program. And here, instead of working with employers, you've got to get to know some churches in the community, some community groups who could identify people in your community. And my advice in terms of getting good demographics, and just like the employers, you want to get as specifically as you can. If you could zero in on a community, the best thing to do is go to those community groups. And they often have numbers already, and they may have applied for grants in the past and have all the demographics you need for that very small community that you're going to be recruiting from in terms of the companies that are, the degradation that has occurred in their community, the abandoned sites in their community, the numbers of gas stations that have been abandoned, and the number of abandoned properties that are still standing, have not been demolished. You need to get very specific, and again, the more specific data you can get on that community, the better off your grant's going to look. And again, just as employers, where you want to get specific names, addresses, and phone numbers, you want to equally inform some key community groups of your intentions and what you would like to do. And I would get them on your advisory committees also. And I would have the same conversation with your community groups as you had with your employers. And at first, get to know them, ask them if they would be interested in working with you, in not in terms of necessarily hiring students, but in providing students. Would they be interested in serving on your advisory committee in terms of the community interaction? Could they guide you in terms of student recruitment to help find people who would be successful in your program? So you want to find community, and they might be churches, they might be schools, they might be community colleges, they may be community-based organizations, and it's almost kind of a mirror image of the employer, but it's in the community. And you want to use them as your recruitment vehicles. And you can also get all the data you need for your grant from them about the specifics of that community. And you want to, again, get as close to the ground as you can. And you want to get to know them. And then you want to keep them informed on your progress of your program. But you also want to have them get their phone numbers and indicate that, is it okay if EPA calls you, that you're going to be working with us in terms of the target community we're working with. So if they were to call and they say, oh, yeah, we're not only working with them, we're on their advisory board. And these are things that are going to give you many points more than everyone else. So what we're trying to do here today or in this call, and we usually have discussions on these calls, but what we wanted to do is kind of give you some hints really quick on how you can kind of juice up the points in terms of what you would get when you're writing these grants. Do any of you have questions of not only about what we talked about today, but questions about the grant and that might be clear or unclear? Anything? Is there anything about this grant that's really troubling anyone? One of the issues is
Camden on the phone right now, or are there others?
Yes, I think right now we've got the two of you, and we'll probably get some people who will call in and listen to the recordings. But how about, do either of you feel parts of this RFP are very difficult to respond to or have an issue with it?
Well, there's a little bit of an issue for us that I'm struggling with is last year the program funded another training grant in Alaska that actually competed with our existing program.
Okay.
So I find it a little backwards that I have to rationalize how we're different when in fact that program actually created a new program that runs in competition with us. And the overlap isn't huge, but there is overlap.
Yeah, that's...
It's going to be a little difficult to differentiate myself when they weren't really held to the same standard last year.
Yeah, and it's strange that I can understand how you feel because it sounds like they went in there and kind of scooped up something that was your turf in some respects and now...
There are limited non-employers and things to work with, but you know, we did have existing funding from a Department of Labor grant. So, in fact, they got this grant despite the fact we were already being funded on a very similar job training program. But we do differentiate ourselves enough that I'm not particularly concerned about it. But I just feel like
what I think you're going to have to do is on two levels. One, can you differentiate your demographic service area? That'll be the key.
I think we differentiate in a lot of ways, and one is we have already have over 80% job placement, and we already have our letters from employers and all in place.
Excellent.
And I don't think this other program quite has the same connection to the same type of employers.
Mm-hmm. Now under this program, a couple of landmines is a lot of people had gone into weatherization last year, and that's a no-no this year. If you look at the RFP, the thing that will guide you will be the people who are supporting the program. And we're talking, the new ones are wastewater, of course, the EPA, the traditional EPA, OSWER, off-solid waste emergency response, things like the chemical safety and awareness and pollution prevention is a new one that has to do with MSDSs and personal protective equipment. Innovative technologies has been in there for a long time, but you want to make sure you address those. The underground storage tanks was new last year, but it's coming more into presence of recycling. So, but you want to really, the key will be on your grant, and we've run into this in a couple of areas, actually in the Northeast, is the same situation where if you can overlap, you just find yourself in a different part of the state or a different part of the city and going after a different demographic. Those will be the things that will probably, it sounds like technically you've got a lot going for you. The landmine would be someone in the evaluation process saying, oh, well, we're already doing that. We're already funding that program, either because their grant is too vague or your grant is too vague and not very specifically saying, and in fact, you might even have to say, there is this program here, but this we are addressing this different segment, and this is why our segment is really now not addressed. You know, this is a group, and our group lives in a degraded area, and they need to help badly, you know, that type of thing, too. One of the problems we have, the national panel, of course, these people are very knowledgeable, but they are separate. They're really not all that familiar. And if they are familiar with the communities, they're really not allowed to necessarily bring that into the conversation. It has to be explicitly written in that proposal. So that is a challenge. One of the things that bothered, and then we got a lot of calls this last week about the three-year grant period versus two, and one of the questions in the second EPA call was someone, this was actually Paula from JFY in Boston, she was trying to figure out, can you have one shorter than 3 years? And Joe said, yes, you can have a program shorter than 3 years, but then Kathleen Curry said, you want to use that third year. You want to remember you have to track your students. So if you don't, you might bring your training into that third year, but you also want to make sure you very specifically talk about how you're going to track your students too, to make your proposal really strong. But both of you in New Jersey and in Alaska, I think one of the challenges, you're going to want to make sure you discriminate very carefully, defining your community, your target communities, because I think you both have really strong demographics and good potentials for winning proposals. It's going to be more a matter of demonstrating that in the written grant. So, well, I hope that was some help. We're going to meet again in on the 4th, our next PLC. We do these every 2 weeks. Whoever is available, this comes online and we'll talk about it. We're going to have another learning community on the 4th, and we'll send out notes to this one for those who weren't able to make it. And if you're all around 2 o'clock on Wednesday, April 4th, just call in, and that'll be pretty much, we'll be in the home stretch of writing these grants, and we can go over some of these questions some more. So appreciate you guys calling, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Okay.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Bye.